Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Wiredly Inspired. Today, we got ourselves a guest, and you know, I'm super excited about that. He's my neighbor. His name is Ian, and I've learned a lot of things from Ian, and I wanted him to come on the show and share some of those things. But just a few other things to touch on before we get this podcast started is anybody out there that's supporting us, we appreciate that. Thank you so much. Jump on to Spotify. Check our podcast out. Go to iTunes. Leave us a review. You know, we want to get some feedback. We want to know how we can grow this into a better podcast. You know, have better guests, better quality. We always want to make sure that we're growing as a podcast as well. Just like we want to keep growing in life, and we want to bring people along for this ride. So feel free to jump on board to iTunes and stuff like that, and leave us a review. But to get things rolling here today. Ian's my neighbor, like I touched on. He has a very incredible background. Somebody that I've, what I can say is my friend, in the little bit of time that I've known him, he's a genuine person, and just has a lot of information that he can share with our podcast here today, and some very insightful things that he can bring to the audience and bring some value. And we hope that you guys, really appreciate us having our first adult guest. We had my daughter on here. So, it's really nice to be able to have our first guest, and we're going to get the guest thing rapidly going here. We're going to get some more people on now that this COVID stuff is, getting a little bit more released. They're allowing us to meet with people here again. So we're going to get that going. And, I just want to welcome Ian to the show and, tell us a little bit about yourself, Ian, and let's get this thing going.
Well, hey, thanks for having me on. I just want to say that I appreciate what you guys do. I think that, there's so many people out there with so many stories, and I think that it would be a shame to go through something and learn something and to not be able to kind of share those nuggets of wisdom that you're able to learn. And so that's kind of what it's all about. You know what I mean? We can help people out by sharing what we went through to help them get through what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And that's just the beauty of being humans. So yeah, thanks for having me on, Steve.
Awesome.
And Taylor.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Let's not forget about Taylor.
That's right. Sitting in silence here. But yeah, let's tell the audience a little bit about yourself now, a little bit about your background and where you're from and all those good things, and we'll kickstart this thing.
For sure. Yeah, I'm from Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'm representing. I'm wearing my Winnipeg sweater today. My brother has a company that he started a few years back called We Heart Winnipeg. So I thought I'd just kind of drop a bit of a plug for him.
Yeah, shout out to We Heart Winnipeg, absolutely.
Exactly. Hit up their Instagram, buy some of their gear, support local. There's never been a more important time to support local as now.
Absolutely.
Going through what this, going through what 2020 brought and coming into the early phases of 2021 here. So yeah, I was born in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I have two older brothers, mom and a dad, kind of a nuclear family, but we had our struggles for sure growing up. We never really had a whole lot of money. Mom and dad were working, every day trying to make ends meet. We were kind of typical potlatch kids. And so, yeah, I think a lot of struggles came from that, but, growing up was a journey, had some hardships, had some real good times as most people do. And I don't really know what to say. I mean, there's a huge journey that brought me to where I am now. Obviously, I'm living in Alberta. I've been here since 2012, so we're going on, 9 years, I guess. Just to kind of narrow it down, try to put my story into a brief story. It's not easy to do that, but I guess growing up, we'll kind of just do a quick chronology. I remember my one of my earliest memories was my parents moving into a new house. It was off of a street called Headmaster. So it's a pretty good neighborhood. Headmaster.
That's a great name.
Yeah, it just kind of sounds regal. It sounds like it's on a high level there, hey? And I remember after a few short years of living there, my parents lost that house. And it was devastating to my mom. My dad just kind of kept trying to move and groove and make things happen for us as a family. But it was really devastating to all of us. And then we moved, before that we were living in a side-by-side, or here in Alberta, you call them duplexes. It's ironic because I live in one now.
That is funny.
And so, yeah, we went from a duplex to this like 4-story house with 5 bedrooms, and it was just absolutely beautiful, to them losing that and then back to a duplex or a side by side. And I remember it was just earth shattering. And that was right around that brings us kind of up to my age of, you know, probably 11, 12. Then I remember the next year was my first year of junior high. And that was just a crazy experience for me. You know, all of a sudden I was exposed to gangs and drugs and, just a whole new world that I didn't know existed. And from there, I started, you know, doing a little bit of drinking. I was getting into smoking pot and smoking cigarettes. You know, it was just a crazy shift. By the age of 13 or 14, I started selling weed kind of out of my, you know, parents' basement in the community, trying to, I guess, make some money. I remember I was always kind of trying to grind, whatever it was. You know what I mean? When I was really young, it was, you know, I wanted that new BMX or that mountain bike, and mom and dad couldn't afford it. So I had to do what I could to try to get my own. And that meant that I was building bikes out of other kids' parts, or, you know, grinding, you know, trying to trade Pokemon cards to get better cards and then sell them and make money that way, or marbles. So it was, I always had that kind of entrepreneurial spirit, but it was driven out of necessity. You know, if I didn't do it, it wasn't going to come. So, you know, by the age of, you know, 15, I think I was starting to get out of selling weed, but I was getting more into some higher risk lifestyle. And at that point, my dad went through a bit of a experience where, you know, there's, I think, a lot of variables at play, but one day he just didn't come home after work. He was working at a car dealership at that time. And, it was like a Friday night. It was in the dead of winter in Winnipeg, Manitoba. It's a different beast. It's a different type of cold there. That's minus 40 in Winnipeg's not minus 40 in Alberta, folks. We have that, there's a lot of humidity there. It's that bone chilling cold. And so I think it was like minus 48 or something that night.
Wow.
And I guess dad went off to, you know, the old grandparents' cottage that had been sold for a while to take his life, you know. And so he ended up going off in the ditch and ended up there for about 36 hours before somebody found him. And I ended up getting frostbite. And it was pretty traumatic. And I guess looking back, I never really dealt with that on the healthiest of levels. And so, I think I just kind of avoided it, and that kind of further perpetuated my high risk lifestyle. I think to keep my mind distracted and to avoid that traumatic event, I continued to drink and smoke weed and just kind of carry on with the other kids that way. And a lot of my buddies were really big drug dealers and stuff. That, you know, that kind of carried on through my high school life. And then I was also in a vocational program in high school, did my electrical, went through halfway through my apprenticeship after graduating. I was working in the field, just kind of learned that wasn't very intellectually stimulating for me. So I, after you learn how to wire a building, it becomes kind of routine. And so at that point, my buddy had just come back to from Mexico. He's El Salvadorian, Spanish, and he's like, man, you know, there's no good tacos here in Winnipeg. And in Mexico and even in New York, there's these taco trucks that bang these tacos out, and they're awesome. And like, why don't we start something like that? So I remember it was the first time I ever took any real risk. And I was like, okay, man. So I borrowed, I think, like 12 grand from his sister with the promise to pay back 14 grand to her in like 3 months. So I just believe, you know what, we're going to get this done. We're going to grind. We're going to make that money back, and we're going to do something great.
How old were you at the time when you guys started?
Man, so at this time, so I graduated obviously right around 18. I did electrical for about 2 years. So I was about 20 years old, and I left electrical to do this business. So I would have been about 21 or 20. And I did that from, you know, 20 to 22-ish. So I kind of took this big leap out. We built this taco truck, and we were, you know, at that time there was only two other food trucks in Winnipeg, and they were like chip and hot dog hamburger type trucks, and we were the first ethnic food on the street. And it was crazy, man. Like that first year we got a lot of traction. That was kind of right when that whole food truck boom was starting to happen. There was like those like food truck war TV shows that were based out of like Vancouver and the States and stuff, California. And so that was our world. You know, we were going downtown, Winnipeg, Portage and Maine, like right in front of the Hydro building every day, banging these tacos out. And it was just a crazy thing. I had never owned a formal business. Yeah, I used to, flip bikes and toys and Pokemon cards, and that became weed. And then it kind of became tacos. So it was pretty crazy. And then I think year two, that taco truck, because we were cooking such greasy meat, like it was chorizo meat, it was really good. But I guess that accumulated above the filter in our like exhaust stack. It sucked up a flame one day, and right on site in front of the Hydro building, that truck caught on fire. And so that led to that truck being written off. And my buddy rebuilt, and I kind of took my money, the insurance money, and decided I should go to school. So that's when I actually came out here to Alberta. Right around this time in my life, my buddy and I, we met this guy who was, I guess he was a pastor, but he was probably a little bit more like what we would call like a social worker. You know, he was going out there, he was trying to find people to help out, because he had a similar background where he was kind of high risk and had that heart for humanity.
So this is where kind of a shift started to happen, maybe a little bit?
Definitely, yeah. So,
okay, well, let's pause here for a second.
Absolutely.
Okay, because we shared a lot of information up to this point. And I just want an opportunity. We're now kind of at the point where you started to make this shift, this change in your life. But, I want to ask you some questions that I would want to be asked, I guess, if it was me in that situation. We shared a lot of information in this the last 10 minutes here. And, I also want you to be able to breathe a little here. So let us ask you a few questions.
Sure. Yeah.
So if we just go back, and I want to go prior to one of the big things that happened to you. I want to go a little bit before your dad's experience there, if you want to call it that. You talked a little bit about not having a lot of money growing up. So what was your relationship, or when you say not a lot of money, what was your relationship with money at that time? And what do you define as not a lot of money? Because it sounded like your parents both worked, they had good jobs, things like that. But sounds like there was a lot of stress with money. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty fair. So, my mom had a couple demons, and might even still have some of those demons laying within herself. I think one of them's smoking cigarettes. I think there's a bit of a fight with gambling even. That kind of lends to some not the most stewardly spirit of spending money. And right. dad, unbeknownst to me until I was like 14 years old, was a recovering alcoholic. So that actually was part of the issue that led to him probably wanting to take his own life. Is he actually relapsed right around that 14-15 year mark in my life. And I think that was super tough on my family,
So he was recovering at that, like he recovered from being an alcoholic at that particular time, but then kind of had another falling out, I guess, with alcohol.
Yeah, yeah. So my whole life he was a recovering alcoholic. I didn't even know that
he didn't know that at all.
I never thought it was weird that, dad didn't drink or mom didn't drink. It just wasn't something that was on my radar. There was no alcohol in my house ever, and it wasn't until I was on like a soccer tournament trip with my brother and my dad down in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where dad ended up getting hammered. And I kind of just thought it was funny, dad's so drunk. And so when I came back, I told my mom the story, and she was just dumbfounded. She was like, "What?
Oh,
your dad's an alcoholic." And I was just shocked by that. I had no idea. I didn't even think about it. So, yeah, that was definitely part of maybe some of their financial struggle, at least at that time. But I think just an unhealthy relationship with money. I was never really taught to save my money, to respect money, to understand how to manage money, to know a very, you know, simple fact that I think a lot of people don't know is that money can make more money. You know what I mean? Like, you got to get into this place where you can actually let money have babies for you and make more money, you know? Right. But I think a lot of people just have this really unhealthy relationship where they accumulate debt and they're just running in this rat race to try to pay off debt versus, you know, stacking money, stacking assets.
Managing debt properly.
Exactly.
In a better way.
Increasing net worth. Yeah.
So it's very evident that the two lifestyle choices, both individually and collectively with your parents, obviously just filters down to your kids, you and your brother, and it has that effect on the family life.
Exactly. And so that was a bit of a cross that you know, we had to bear in our later adult lives.
Right.
I hope that answers your question a little bit as to why we had some money struggles. I mean, you know, my parents also didn't really invest in themselves very much. You know, they're lovely people. They love their kids. They love us very much. They were always, love was never lacking in the home. But, you know, I guess if I could scrutinize my parents one little bit, and it's not easy for me to do that, but they're not necessarily people that invest a whole lot in their own personal growth. They never went to, you know, university or never finished university. They don't invest money. They live paycheck to paycheck. And so that's become a huge part of who I am as an individual as well. I'm very money conscious. I'm always thinking about the future. I'm always thinking about developing personally. And it strictly comes from that fact that I want my kids to have all the things that I wished that I would have when I was growing up.
Right. Yeah. Well, this podcast is about you, but if I can just add in, both of you and I knowing this information now, and we have very similar backgrounds in that sense. Without my dad never made that, got to a place where he wanted to take his life, thankfully, but my dad's a alcoholic currently. He's never been a recovering alcoholic. He's been an alcoholic. And we don't need to touch on why he's made that choice. I kind of know why a lot of it, but you touched on your mom, gambling and smoking. My mom's that mom too. My mom smoked her whole life. At one point she had an addiction, was out at the casino all the time with a girlfriend. And you know, oddly enough, in a sense, she won a Mustang actually out at this casino. But when you really start factoring it in, it's like she wins a $25,000 Mustang, but probably spent twice that amount to get it.
Exactly.
You know, so it's like, oh, I want a Mustang. It's like, no, you technically bought it.
Yeah. You bought them two and took one.
Yeah. So very relatable backgrounds in that sense. So I definitely understand what it was like feeling like the relationship with money wasn't there for me as well. So, you know, I definitely relate to your story that way. And I think a lot of people will relate to this story, and that's why I think it was important to just go back and ask that question about the relationship with money and what it does to a family and the stress. Like, my parents are still stressing about money. I don't know if your parents are the same, but you know, you see what it's like to grow up in an environment where you don't have the extra, or you know, you can't get that extra thing, or you know, at a very young age, you're like, holy shit, I need to go work just so I can have some cool shit. Like, you know,
and I think a lot of people build or develop a bit of a resentment toward money or other people that make money. And you look at people that are doing well as though they're the enemy, because you develop this mindset where it's like the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. But it's the human who decides on which side of the fence they want to be on, you know?
And that's powerful in itself to say that, honestly.
To break that mindset.
Absolutely. Really,
to break that cycle.
I could live my life saying, woe is me, you know. Of course I'm not ahead. I come from this lifestyle where I was never given anything to get ahead. But we're all given a life, and we're given a brain and a mind and choices and
the same opportunity.
The same, you know,
really.
Well, I don't. You know,
you might have an accelerated background based on where you come from, but if you have a shitty mindset, eventually you'll end up poor too. Even if you come from a wealth background, it's tough to sustain wealth. Even, you know, it's like these rich kids, sure, like they might have a health or a wealthy lifestyle as a child, but once they get off on their own, it's a mindset thing after that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think they just had an accelerated opportunity, really.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, opportunity I don't think that we're all given the same opportunity, but I think that we're all given a brain and we're all given the ability to make choices
right.
and to break cycles. You know, yeah. I mean, I've already broken the cycle that I was born into. I'm not in a place where I'm extremely wealthy or I have all the things that I want to have.
Not yet, right?
Not yet. Exactly. And that's that shift in that mindset. It's saying, yeah. you know what? Hey, I was dealt this hand in life, and luckily in the game of life, or at least in the game of poker, I get a couple times where I get to, you know, trade in my cards and try to develop a bit of a better hand here. So, the nice thing with life is that it's not about chance. It's about breaking things down strategically.
Yes.
If you have a target in mind, develop semi, you know, small and even large micro and macro goals that are going to lead to you achieving that target.
Mm-hmm.
And be strategic about it. Be logical about it and know that I think it's going to take time. It's going to take energy. It's going to take
right.
constant, you know, positive mindset, or at least a mindset that works toward the goal that you're wanting to achieve to get there. Otherwise, it's not going to fall into your lap. But I think a lot of people, they get confused with, like, you know, the poor getting poorer with, you know, choices.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, don't let that debilitate you. Don't let the circumstances or the hand that you were dealt debilitate you.
Or the victim. Don't let that victimize you or define you the rest of your life.
Exactly. You were given that hand, but you get to do something with it. You don't have to. You don't have to end the game that way.
No.
Because
you can't choose the hand that you were dealt coming into this world, but you can certainly change the cards that you want to play with the rest of your life.
Exactly. And you get to choose the games that you play.
Knowing that you're in control.
Exactly.
You have a level of control in your life that you can change or stay the same. Or, unfortunately, some.
It's like you might want to give all five cards back. If you're playing a five card game of poker, you're like, all these are fucked. 2, 3, 7, 8.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Where's my aces?
Exactly.
I need to go generate some of my aces.
Exactly.
Where's my aces at? What associations do I need to change? What kind of lifestyle do I need to have to maintain that type of, or get that growth that I want to have?
Exactly. And you know, going back to my whole, you know, part of my life where my dad was going through what he was going through and the impact that had on me. I mean, that definitely made me become a bit of an avoidant adult, and I didn't have any direction. I didn't, you know, I was kind of falling into that woe is me, the poor get poorer kind of mindset where I was just kind of going with the flow.
And you were allowing yourself to be a victim maybe at that time, possibly.
Exactly. When you go with the flow and you don't process or work through that event or those events that happen to you, you fall victim to, you know, being somebody who is directionless. And that's kind of who I was. And I didn't really want to deal with things. And so when that guy came into my life when I was, you know, 20, you know, when that taco truck burnt, right around the time where that taco truck business, you know, ended for me, I came in contact with this guy who helped me to develop some direction in life and said, hey, listen, I get that you are from this background, but don't focus on the past. Don't focus on where you're from. Focus on where you want to go. Because that's ultimately how life kind of shakes out for people. If you're that person who's focusing on the past and you're constantly driving the car in your life, looking through the rear view, you're never going to get to a destination. You're constantly looking back. You're going to crash all the time, and burn, you know, but if you're focusing on some sort of target where you want to be, and you're developing steps on how you want to get there, that's how you're going to get there. And that's something that this guy taught me. And he also made me look at, you know, the way that I was living, choices I was making, you know, is smoking cigarettes and smoking weed and drinking and partying and carrying on and spending all your money. Is that going to get you to where you want to be in life? If it is, great. Fantastic. You're on track. But if that isn't where you want to be, or isn't going to get you to where you want to be, let's break that down a bit. And so one of the things that he kind of helped me do was he got me involved with putting out my post-secondary application to university. And that's what brought me out to Alberta. And I was never the kid that thought that I would go to university. I was, initially I was in a vocational high school. Didn't think that I'd ever go to university. And so I ended up, you know, I got to a place where I said, you know what, I want to get away from this lifestyle that I'm living. I want to create some direction in my life. I need to create some momentum and inertia. What better than to get out of Manitoba, go out to Alberta where I'm away from some negative influence and I'm able to kind of put in some time and effort and energy into myself. And at the same time, maybe get some education out of it. So at that time, I moved out. That was 2012. I moved out to Lacombe, Alberta, and started my post-secondary degree.
That's incredible.
And I love that quote to go back when you said the rearview mirror and all that. Because there's a quote out there that a few people have said and have adopted through the years. But there's a reason why the front, the windshield is 100 times bigger than the rearview mirror.
Exactly. Right?
And it's all about where you're going, not where you came from.
Yeah, what
and staying in the past. So I love that. And just that whole just kind of background and speech there that you just said, it shows your maturity. It shows your growth and those pivots that you made and the people that you met. And it just shows a lot. So it's great. And what I want to go back to real quick too is what was one of the, because on a business level, you and your friend had the food truck business partner, and then you guys had that kind of that event happened, unfortunately, and you guys had your exit and he kind of stayed, you kind of went a different route. But what was, if you were to remember, what was one of the challenges that you had with getting the food truck started? If you recall, was there any kind of challenge?
Man, there's a lot. That's so, I always kind of break things down as being kind of games. I think that life is kind of a game, and I think that it's filled with a lot of different little mini games. And the cool thing is that we get to kind of choose what games we want to play. And, if you play stupid games, you're going to get stupid prizes. If you play good games, you're probably going to get good prizes. And that kind of keeps life a little lighter for me, because there's so many different games. There's, financial games, relationship games. And it's not that you're playing people like they're, characters in some sort of like arbitrary, situation that you're running. It brings some light and some life to things, yeah. So I guess at that time I was learning a whole new game. I was learning this game of the food industry, how to build a truck, that's going to be able to produce what I want it to produce. Licensing regulations, where you can park, how to get a business license, how to get a food establishment license, food handling courses, all this kind of stuff. It's such a compact. Every game has so many little moving parts and a bunch of minutia that you have to get through and go through. But that's just part of the game. You have to ask yourself: is it worth learning it? Is it worth playing? And so I had to learn money management. That was something that my parents never taught me. It was not bred into me, and it was never taught in school.
So, unfortunately not. No.
Unfortunately not. I think that, our education system really fails a lot of kids because it doesn't teach us for life. It teaches us how to fall into, how to get the right grades to get into a program in a post-secondary establishment to get on to the next, degree or master's or PhD or whatever you're going to go to. But it doesn't teach us life skills that are as basic as, building an expense sheet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Budgeting.
Yeah, budgeting your money. How to do your taxes.
Payable, taxes, like everything.
Yeah. So
really no real life, the real life skills that people need, just they're kind of overlooked.
Exactly. I think that some of the most astonishingly successful people in society are people that didn't necessarily go to school. They're people that broke out of that mold and said, "Hey, listen, I believe that success is it's not necessarily linear, and it doesn't mean that I need to graduate high school and then go to university and then get an after degree and then work for a company for 50 years and build my pension and retire." I mean, that's what our forefathers, or at least my grandfather, did. And I'm finding it to be extremely—it's
a broken system,
unrewarding.
Yeah,
don't get me—not
to cut you off there, but no, it's a broken
system.
Don't
get me started on the government aspect of all that shit.
Unrewarding. That's a good way to put it.
Exactly.
Government wants us to all be a bunch of fucking robots.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because I actually work for the government now. But maybe I can tell you a bit of a story about how that came to be.
Absolutely.
So when I went to university, initially I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I just knew, hey, you know what? I want some direction in my life. Maybe getting an education is the way to go about doing that. And so, came out to Alberta and for the first 2 years, I didn't really know what I wanted to do for a program. I did a bunch of electives. Initially, I was you know, in a program that I didn't really want to be in. I was kind of just trying to figure it out.
What was that program?
So the school that I went to was a bit of a staunch religious university. And I mean, I'm not super religious or, you know, all about kind of the dogma, but the individual that I got involved with that helped me kind of change my life around and create some direction, he was part of a, you know, he's a pastor. And so I went to the school that was under, I guess, the same kind of Christian denomination as he was. And it was a good place, you know, it provided me with a solid education, good people around me. It wasn't a bunch of kids that were doing a bunch of partying and stuff and going crazy. At that time in my life, I at that university, I was actually put in a leadership role. So I was kind of a student dean. I was in charge of the dorm.
Oh, wow.
Managing, you know, I don't even know how many kids live in there, probably 150 kids.
Holy, okay.
Wow. Going through, you know, all of the issues that come with being 18 years old and being sent off to school by your parents or right. whatever, right? And trying to figure out life. And I was a little bit older. I was like 23 at this time, I think I was.
Yeah, considered old for the college.
I mean, for the college life, yeah, a lot of kids go at 18. And so I had a little bit of life experience already prior to that. And so I was able to kind of get in that position. And it was a huge blessing to me. You know, I was given income. I was putting myself through school. I didn't have parents that were paying for my university. I was on student loans and I was working and doing it on my own. And I think that I had a little bit of resentment towards some kids actually that were sent there by their parents who were footing the bill. And I was kind of just like, man, you little fuckers kind of thing. But
yeah, kind of what you touched on is when your mindset was all about like looking at people, these rich people are rich. And, you know, you have that stigma towards them a little bit.
I mean, if I hope to be in the position one day where I'll be able to help my kid go to school if that's what he wants to do, or, you know, fund at least in part some goals that he has in life, you know, help him get there quicker.
Yeah.
But so I was, you know, around year two, I had I switched my degree. I realized that I wanted to be kind of in a human services type of role, so I moved into behavioral sciences at the time. And so it's basically a combination of sociology and psychology. And
with knowing and you knew the direction you were kind of going at that time?
At that time, I wanted to work in like child protective services.
Right.
Which is ironic because I actually got into doing that.
What drove you towards that avenue?
You know,
wanting to work with the kids and youth. And
So I'm a strong believer in passing on the torch in life. You know, I was a kid that didn't have any direction, didn't have a lot of, you know, goals, didn't have anybody there to kind of show me how to do it. And then this guy came into my life and he helped me to get direction. And so I guess I felt like I owed that to humanity. I wanted to pass on that torch.
Oh, I see. So yeah. Kind of he helped, you know, somebody younger than him, essentially. So you wanted to pass on that torch
exactly.
the same way.
Exactly. And okay. I was like, you know, what's the medium that I'm going to use to do that? I better go to school to get the, you know, education, to get myself into that.
The credentials.
Yeah, the credentials to get myself into that role. And so that was kind of what I was doing. At this time in my life, I was also starting to date this girl. And I, a lot sooner than I probably should have, ended up marrying her. So I met her beginning of year three in school.
Oh, you met at the college?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We met at the college. And we met beginning of year three and by the... Oh, no, sorry. We met at the beginning of year two. And by the end of year three, we were engaged and were getting married that summer.
Kind of just fell head over heels for each other.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, she was a good girl and she had a good heart and she had a lot of, you know, awesome qualities. But I think that was the first or probably second girl that I had dated or been, you know, in a committed relationship with. And I think I was definitely a little bit more almost in love with the idea of being in love than anything. And so,
kind of false, I don't know, kind of just falsehood, I guess, in the sense of what you wanted in the relationship maybe at that time.
For sure.
In love with the idea, maybe a little bit more than the person, would that be fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and she had some mental health issues that were pretty prevalent in her life and stemming back to her own childhood and, you know, constantly haunt her in the present time at that time. You know, she was actually diagnosed with bipolar disorder. So, you know, I had to ride some pretty high waves and low waves. You know what I mean? You're constantly going between a significant height of mania down to a very low episode of depression. And so you're riding these big waves in this life, trying to cope and trying to make sense of things.
Right.
And so for my last year of school, I was married to her. I was working almost full time, and I was doing a condensed course load. I think my first semester I was doing like 9 courses or 8 courses or something like that. And second semester was probably like 6 or 7. And I was somehow able to graduate on time still, even though I switched my degrees halfway through. And then, you know, from there, I went on to getting a job in Child Protective Services. And I think the reason that I wanted to get into that was, once again, is to kind of pass on the torch, try to help humanity. And, you know, I think I just felt like I kind of owed it to the human population to
be a positive influence,
influence, and to instigate change in people's lives and give back, because somebody gave back to me.
Right. That's wild. I mean, it's admirable to get into that type of career. One thing I wanted to go a little bit back, this is a question I was going to ask while you were talking, is what it sounds like to me, the individual that came into your life at that time, it sounds like what really that individual kind of bestowed upon you or put into your life was probably stability. Would that be fair to say? Or direction at that particular time?
Oh, you're talking about the pastor?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he I guess what he represented, he was a symbol of change. He was able to kind of connect me to a different world that was able to provide me with all of the things that I wanted out of life. You know, I knew that I didn't want to be smoking and drinking and smoking weed and, working jobs that paid just above minimum wage. And I knew I didn't want to fall into the same type of lifestyle that maybe my parents were living. I mean, they didn't smoke and drink and all that stuff all the time, but it's that mindset shift. I didn't want to fall into that style of living where you're not building something toward the future. And so he was able to kind of give that to me. He was able to inspire some hope in my life and give me some direction. And it was pretty awesome.
Did you ever look at that time, if you were to think back once again, that there was a kind of that gap and void that maybe you weren't the right person for that in terms of that type of mentorship? Because, well, hey, I'm not that religious really at all. But he is, yeah. Right? He's, you know, such a pillar of God and Christianity or whatever it really was. You know what I mean? Or no, you're just like, that doesn't matter.
Well, that's I've always believed that there's a higher power. I still do. I believe there's a God. I don't know what you want to call that God. If it's Allah or Jesus or, you know, Jehovah or the creator. I think that I believe in creation. I think this world was probably created.
I agree with you on that front. Yeah, the same way.
Yeah, but I don't know that who's going to know exactly the character of God,
right,
with absolute certainty. I mean, nobody. That's what faith is all about. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's about believing in something that you can't necessarily see or touch or have proof for. So
that's right. Yes.
And I think at that time in my life, I was a believer, and I was going to a Christian university, and I would say that I'm still a believer, but I don't go to church, nothing like that.
The traditional practice.
Exactly. Yeah. But I believe in the spirit of Christianity or of godliness is just, you know, being good to people, being kind, passing on the torch, giving somebody hope who doesn't have hope, bringing some light into somebody's world of darkness, you know, showing that there's more than one way to live your life. And I'm constantly learning that, you know, and I believe in being good because it's the right thing to do. And I also believe that, you know, we always have two choices on how we want to react to any circumstance in life. We can focus on the negative or we can focus on the positive. Right. You know what I mean? Somebody could, we'd be driving our car and we can get into a car accident. We can focus on the fact that we just crashed our car and now there's damage and it might be, you know, we might have to go through insurance and get it fixed and there might be a deductible and our premiums might go up and life sucks. Or we could be like, hey, you know what? Thank God that I have a vehicle and I was probably on my way to a job and
Thank God I didn't get hurt.
Thank God I didn't get hurt, hurt somebody.
Or hurt the other person.
I'm really happy I do have insurance, because that's going to cover this damage that I wouldn't be able to pay for if not.
Right.
You know, so we have, that's just one kind of circumstance, but that we can plug that into any area of life. You know, there's so many things we can focus on, the negative or the positive.
We have a whole podcast episode dedicated to positive thought.
Yes, we do. And more to come.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, so I mean, I graduated 2016, started my career in, I guess, October of 2016, and I've been doing it now for 4.5 years. Initially, it wasn't very easy because I was now in this world where I was helping people, and I was working with the public, and, you know, in child protective services, you're working with addiction, you're working with child abuse, you're working with emotional injury, physical injury, poverty, just a host of different factors that lead to a lot of disharmony in life. And at that time in my life, I was going through a lot of that too with my significant other. At that time, we had bought our first house. That was June of 2017. So about 9 months after I started in my career. And at that time, my wife was going through some pretty significant mental health issues. You know, she was then hospitalized for probably the second time that she had been admitted to a psych unit, and she was there for, I think, 6 weeks that stint.
And all because of the bipolar disorder.
That's right, yeah. So initially when she was younger, it was misdiagnosed as borderline personality disorder, but they later found out that, no, it was classic bipolar disorder. So there's a lot of diagnostic criteria overlap there between the two diagnoses. But she's bipolar, and so that caused a lot of stress in our relationship.
I imagine I
felt like, you know, when she was going through a stint where she was having, whether it was mania or depression, she wasn't able to work, or, you know, so it was pretty hard for her to keep a job or to contribute financially, and I felt like I was carrying a lot of that burden on my own. And you know, obviously there's other areas of our life that struggled as well. You know, our personal relationship wasn't great.
Right.
I felt like maybe I wasn't, I think I just felt a little bit shortchanged at times. You know, mm-hmm. like I signed up for something that I didn't know I was signing up for. And some, maybe a little bit of resentment grew as well.
Is there any, now I don't know truthfully the answer to this question entirely, but is there any type of cure, let's say, for something like a personality disorder or bipolar, disorder? And I ask that because of definitely your background and understanding, you know, mental health more than I do. And I don't know if there's any way for somebody to ever overcome that, or is it just like a, make sure you take your meds, so you can always have a good day and things like that. Because I think we want to find a cure for all things, and I don't know if there's anything that cures somebody from that type of disease, disorder, or mental illness, or however
classify. There's so many different mental illnesses, and there's so many different reasons for those mental illnesses. It could be hereditary and genetic. It could be environmental. It could be some sort of trauma occurred in your life that you didn't process through and you didn't deal with on maybe the most effective level. But, you know, I think there's medication, and there's learning how to cope, and there's developing your identity. So medication's like max 30% of the equation. If you're going to look at some sort of status bar of mental health where there's some, you know, almost unachievable 100% mark, and zero is like you're suicidal, you're catatonic, you're in bed, you don't want to get out, you don't want to do anything, you don't want to contribute to society or to your own
life or health.
Maybe that's a zero. And I think medication is one thing that you could definitely do if there is some sort of, you know, hormonal or chemical imbalance in your brain that's going to maybe get you to that 20, 30% mark where you're able to get out of bed.
Right.
And then the rest is for you to do. You know, the rest is, in part, it's going to be diet. It's going to be exercise. It's going to be working. It's going to be doing things that make you feel like you're contributing to society and that you're,
self-worth, it sounds like.
Exactly, yeah. You're
love yourself, figure out how.
Yeah, you're getting some sort of fulfillment. And I think that identity is a huge thing too. We need to know we need to base our identity on several different things that are important to us. So for me, that's fishing and being out in the wilderness and building things, fixing things and grinding, you know, that entrepreneurial spirit that I think that I have within myself is a huge part of my identity. And I think that if you hinge your identity on only one thing or only a few things, I mean, if whatever circumstance comes into life that removes one of those, you know, things from your life, you're hooped, and all of a sudden your identity has been rocked and your world's been shaken. Mm. Whereas like if somebody were to take one little piece of my identity away, I mean, it would hurt, but I wouldn't be left without anything to do or anything that's going to feed me back and fulfill me, you know? And so I think that that's so important. I think that a lot of people don't really have, you know, things that they base their identity on. And I think that that creates so many areas of lack in one's life. So I could definitely see that in my ex-partner's life and her, you know, in our relationship. I was constantly trying to feed something in her. You know, I remember I would buy her things to, you know, so she said that she liked music. So I'd buy her a piano or a flute, you know, or she liked photography. I bought her a camera, you know, but she's the one that's got to go out and do those things. You know what I mean? Those might have been pieces right. of our identity, but she wasn't feeding them. So when you're not achieving, when you're not participating in the things that make you you, you feel lost and your world gets shaken. So if I were to put in a plug out there about mental health and how to, you know, I don't know that there's any cure to mental health. I think that it's everybody has mental health.
Right.
All three of us have mental health.
We have another podcast episode all about that.
Yeah. I have struggles that I guarantee you that I face. I have OCD on some level. I have ADHD on yep. another level. And
yep.
I'm not going to let those, I've never been diagnosed with them. I guarantee you I could be if I wanted to be, if I went and saw a psychiatrist and listed off 5 of the 8, you know, diagnostic criteria that I guarantee you I struggle with. I would get that diagnosis, but you know, it's more about learning yourself and learning how you tick and things that make you feel better and hurt you and deter you and learning how to cope with things. I think going back to my dad's, you know, situation where he wanted to leave this world, that impacted me on a massive level, but I didn't really deal with it. I just kind of pushed it into the background, put it on the back burner. The problem is like you can have dirt in your life and you can try to throw a rug over it. The dirt's still underneath that rug.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's gonna fester and it's gonna stink and it's gonna let you know that it's still there.
Until you do something about it.
Yeah. And you gotta get your hands dirty. You gotta lift up that patch or that band-aid or that, you know, rug that you threw over the dirt in your life, and you gotta deal with that thing. And I think that when I initially started to deal with my thing was when that guy came into my life. He helped me to get direction and to focus on myself and reflect on my life and reflect on what had happened to me and move forward. You know what I mean? It's not a bad thing to focus on the past, but don't constantly do it. You know what I mean? Look at the things that have come up in your past. Learn how they may have impacted or affected you in your current life. Work through them and move forward. There's got to be a flow to this. But don't think that that thing that happened to you that you're too afraid to deal with is going to go away, because it's not, you know.
No.
And in fact, it's like a wound. If you don't tend to your wound, that thing might get infected and it might fester and it might get worse and you might end up losing a freaking arm over a paper cut that could have been easily dealt with had you just given it some attention.
Yeah. I love that. That's a great analogy. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking to before we started the episode here. It's just in conversation of it's not about the events that happen to you in life. They happen for you.
Exactly.
Right. And it kind of is getting away from that victim mentality and the woe is me and just the kind of living in the self pity.
Yeah. And you said, and you guys have mentioned, and I fully agree with it, that life or universe or God or whatever isn't going to give you something that's bigger for you to be able to handle. Like life will never throw you something that's too big for you to handle. I agree with that. And if you're dealt a hand in life that is so, you know, huge that you feel is way outside of your, you know, ability to cope with or to deal with or to process. Take that as a compliment from life, saying, hey, listen, I know that you think that you can't deal with this, but you can. You are that big. You are that strong. You are that smart. You are that intelligent. You are that resourceful. You are that, you can get through it.
Yeah.
You know, take that with, take that as a huge compliment. You know what I mean?
It's a good way to look at it.
Believe in yourself.
Yeah. I like that too, because I think we did touch on that away from the podcast, and your opportunity to learn how to grow as an individual. Like when you do have goals and dreams and things like that, like you obviously had some goals and dreams. So life was like, we're going to plug this guy into your life and see if you take it. See if you bite on that. See if you use this as an opportunity to grow as an individual, because you wanted to get out of that, the drinking, the smoking, and the type of lifestyle that, you know, you didn't want to have. You had this burning desire to do more. So in a way, the universe is like, okay, here, let's plug in this individual and see how Ian handles it. Does Ian grow from this opportunity, or does he go away from it? You know, and I think the universe presents ourselves with all of these things. Like if you know, you have these goals, these dreams, and these ambitions, but in order to get to that level, you need a growth opportunity. So sometimes that's some sort of adversity in your life that you need to go through in order to learn the skills needed to get through it and get to that next level. And I think the universe, God, whatever it is in your life, I think destiny, if you will, to a degree, is controlled by, you know, our goals and dreams, and the universe will just kind of throw these things into your situation. Like, okay, so those are your goals, those are your dreams. Well, let me plug this into your life and see if you use it as that growth opportunity, or do you use it as the victim opportunity to digress, or are you going to progress?
Yeah.
You know, that's your opportunity. You know, the game that you talked about, at some point you get to the boss level.
Yeah.
In this game called life,
it's time to level up.
It's time for you to level up and get to the next level. Or do you constantly lose when challenged in that same way?
Exactly.
You know, do you constantly digress?
If you lose, is it because, are you going to be like, oh, well, you know, I was just, of course I lost. I was dealt the shit hand. I was, you know, I was never given the tools that I needed to beat that boss. Or do you just own it and say, hey, maybe I didn't freaking prepare enough, man. Maybe I didn't, what I mean? Everybody's looking for that light bulb moment, that eureka moment where it's like that light bulb comes on for you. Life doesn't give you light bulbs. Life gives you switches.
Yeah.
And it's up to you to kind of push that switch or open that door or figure out, you know, what do I need to do to make the light bulb turn on? What cause do I need to do to create the effect?
Either sit in that darkness or you find a way to turn on that light and power through it. Really.
Exactly. And I think that a lot of people really get bogged down by the fact that they were dealt these hands, or they couldn't
pity parties.
Pity parties. You know what I mean? Hey, guess what, man? You wanna achieve something? How about you set up the target and you write down a bunch of little micro goals to achieve that target? Otherwise, it's not gonna happen. Nobody's gonna come to your door and be like, hey, so, you know, I heard that you want this 32 unit apartment building. Here you go, man. Here's the deed and the keys. Have fun. Have at her.
Yeah.
No, if you want that apartment building, you probably have to start out with one house, one unit, get on to two units, four units, eight units, exactly. Whatever. You know what I mean? And build that empire. But if the 16 or the 32 unit apartment building is your dream, break it down, man. What do you got to do to achieve that dream? Maybe your dream is, you know, you want to have a house and a family and a career and stability. And okay, what's it going to take for you to get that? Because a bunch of randomness and lack of direction, it's not going to result in you achieving that thing that you want. Never.
No. What kind of person does that look like, right?
Yeah.
What kind of person do I need to be to kind of have those things?
Exactly.
To step into that role.
Exactly. So going back to my marriage, you know, this is back in like 2017, 2018. I mean, I quickly learned that as much as I loved this person, we weren't partners to each other. You know what I mean? That love quickly evolved from being, I guess, what I thought was kind of a romantic partner type of love to, you know, almost somebody that was my friend, somebody that I was supporting, somebody that I was kind of not caring for, but providing care for sure.
Right.
And her and I, you know, got to the point where, you know, we amicably separated. And we just realized that, you know, we weren't the romantic partners for each other that we desired. I mean, it later came out that, you know, she now identifies as being, you know, a lesbian and
oh, wow.
Yeah. But you know, the crazy thing is that it wasn't until we broke up and I removed myself from her life and being kind of that, I guess, that crutch.
Right.
That she learned to walk on her own 2 feet. You know, I was constantly caring for her and providing for her and trying to be right by her. And the ironic part is the more that I did that, the more it kind of enabled her to not really have to do her own, to pull her own weight, to do her own thing. So it was after we separated that she, you know, started to set out goals for her life, and started to put in the work and started to achieve things and started to build more of a sense of identity based on several different things versus just one or two things. Now I think she's actually doing quite a bit better. But
well, in a way, if you want to look at the positive side, you loved her the best way that you could at that particular time, and you chose to leave her life, which was maybe the universe providing her that challenge where, you know, you walked away from it, and she needed, that was her opportunity to digress or progress. And it sounds like she used that as a learning opportunity for herself and decided to progress as an individual rather than digress from that. And you know, sometimes they say the greatest way you can love somebody is by leaving them, knowing that it's unhealthy for both of you.
Yeah, exactly.
And unfortunately that happens, but it was a great experience in a way for both of you guys. So just a quick question for you is, because there's many people out there that, you know, they just might not want to talk about it. They're not open about it. And this is something that's limiting them in their life. And they feel that this is exactly what they're going through. So what kind of advice or words of wisdom can you kind of give someone, whether male or female, that maybe have experienced or are experiencing the same thing that you have?
Oh, man. As it pertains to like mental health.
Yeah.
Or living with somebody that has significant mental health.
Yes, exactly.
I think that you'll quickly learn over time whether or not it's a two-way street. If somebody's actively trying to help themselves and you're trying to help them as well, there's light at the end of the tunnel. But if you're constantly trying to pull somebody's weight for them and you're doing everything that you can for them, but you don't find that they're doing anything for themselves, and that's, you know, there's going to be moments where, you know, somebody might not be doing the things that they need to do for themselves. But if that's the underlying kind of but overarching theme in their life, you're going to quickly learn that. And the reality is that you can never be big enough or enough for somebody else. They need to become, you know, that thing for themselves. They need to be filling themselves up. They need to be
taking the responsibility,
achieving, you know, what they need to achieve. You can't be going out in the world and trying to fill up your cup and then come home and have that person just waiting there for you to drink, you know, the liquid that you were able to fill up or pour in your own, you know, cup of life. You know what I mean? They need to be doing that too. So, I mean, like, the best advice that I can give is to, you know, to support the people that you love. If they're going through something and they're struggling, be there to not be their crutch, but be a support for them. But they need to be doing the work too. And mental health cannot be fixed or solved or resolved by taking a pill. Anybody that thinks that that's putting all of their eggs in that one medicinal basket, it's not going to work. You know,
it's not the answer.
The meds are to take the edge off, numb down the symptoms a little bit to the point where you can actually get out of bed and do the rest of the work. But you got to do the work.
Well, and I'm just going to chime in here. They've done so much research with placebos, for instance, where they provide somebody with this pill, whether it's a weight loss or mental health or you name it. And then they don't tell the people, you know, they do the case studies. There's been so many studies. Let's give these 1,000 people an actual pill and these 1,000 the sugar pill, but tell them it's the same thing. And you ultimately, a lot of times, have the people that were taking the placebo get to a higher level. Thinking that this object was, you know, the pill was doing the job for them, but really it was their entire mindset shift that got them there. You know, they started putting in the work, they started exercising more rather than taking the fat burning pill or whatever it was. And then it was never a fat burning pill. It was actually a sugar pill that did nothing. It was you that put in that work.
The power of the mind is so incredible. You know, me coming in contact with that guy who helped shift the entire trajectory of my life, that wasn't because he did anything for me. It's because he inspired me with hope. He helped me to believe that anything that I wanted to achieve, I could achieve. And I went out and I did it.
But go to work. But
go to work. Yeah, go to work. Go
yeah.
do it.
Yeah. Get
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you don't think that some genie is going to be rubbed out of a bottle that's going to come and grant you your three wishes, man, like you be your own genie and you achieve your own dreams and goals and wishes and you know, you get to do that.
Right.
That's a beautiful thing. You know what I mean? I would way rather work and achieve the 10 mil versus winning the lottery and getting the 10 mil. Cause the guy that there's stats out there that say that a lot of the vast majority of people that win the lottery squander and waste all that money and become broke anyway.
Within like 5 years again, or whatever. Yeah,
another entire podcast. Harp on that too.
100%. But if you're going to be that guy that's going to stack that, you know, that's going to level up each time in every game that you want to play and get to that place where you are at that 10 million mark, no one's taken that from you.
Well,
you know what I mean? Because you've learned all of that knowledge. And even if they did take that 10 mil from you, you know what it took to get there and you can get there again. You know what I mean?
It's funny. You say it. I thought I was just thinking the same thing because Uncle G talks about that too. He's like, the one thing, even if you went, you know, like I have $100 million right now, hypothetically. And for anybody who doesn't know who Uncle G is, it's Grant Cardone. But he's like, the one thing nobody can ever take away from me is the skills that I've learned to get me to where I am now.
Exactly.
So you can like, you can take away all my money and you can take away everything, but you can't take away my skill or my mindset that got me to where I'm at. So I'll get there again.
Yeah.
And I know I'm capable of it. I know I can do it. I've done it before. And that's also why you can grow and grow multiple businesses. I grew one business successfully once. I can grow another business to that level, or I can do this thing again or that thing again, because you can never take away people's will and skill. You can't take that shit away.
You can have, you know, Holocaust survivors and stuff, they'll say, you can have my body, but you can't have my mind. You know, you can cause whatever physical ailments to me. You can do whatever you want to do to me. You can't have my mind.
Yeah.
It's mine. You know what I mean? That's what we get to develop. That's what we get to choose.
Exactly.
To grow and to build.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love that. That's very powerful.
Yeah, that is powerful.
It's ownership. It's
We should talk real estate all day, man. it's about personal growth. Hey, you know,
it is.
Whatever the things that are out there in this universe that interest you, do more of that.
Exactly.
And hang out with like-minded individuals. You want to be a millionaire? Hang out with people that are financially literate. And people that are,
or at least go in the same direction.
Yeah, you want to hang out with people. You want a good marriage and a stable family. Hang out with other people that are in stable marriages and have stable families. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
If you become you're a product of your environment. You know what I mean? And but you get to choose your environment. That's the beauty of that. You know
exactly.
what I mean? I was a product of my environment growing up. Maybe I didn't have a lot around me, but I got to choose when I became older and when I started making choices what I wanted to be around me. And so now, you know what I mean? Like, especially in the area, the career that I'm working in, I mean, I'm constantly having these conversations with parents or youth who are trying to create lives for themselves and do things. I'm like, man, like you choose your destiny. You choose who the people are that are around you. You know what I mean? If you hang out with people, if you don't want to be smoking drugs or doing drugs or drinking and you know, having all the negative outcomes that come from that, those choices and that lifestyle, don't do them. You know, and a lot of my kids will say, well, you know what, man, I want to go out and I want to help those people that were helping me. Great. Get to the place where you're stable enough to do that.
Yeah.
And that's going to take some time. For me, that was coming to Alberta. You know what I mean? Now I can go and hang out with people from my past and try to inspire hope, and not in some weird, obvious way, but just by me being me and saying, hey, man, I love you. You want to achieve something, man? Let's figure out how to get that done.
Right.
But that took time for me to create that stability for myself.
Yeah.
You know, don't go into the heart of your temptation and try to prevail. You're going to get pulled down every single time, man. If you don't want to be a smoker, don't hang out with other smokers, at least until there's been a year, 2 years, 3 years of your, you know, sobriety from smoking.
You built up that defense.
Yeah, the defenses that you've created new coping strategies. You know, you know how to deal with that type of temptation.
Right.
But don't, if you're a week away from, or a week out from smoking, you quit smoking, don't go hang out with your buddies that are smoking cigarettes in front of you.
Yeah.
You're not gonna succeed. It's not gonna be a good
outcome.
It's one of those, it's easy to do and it's easy not to do.
Yeah.
type of thing. Right? Yeah. So
that's amazing. Now that we're on your career a little bit, I just want to ask, just because I'm curious, so I always want to ask questions that, you know, I'm curious about, and hopefully it's questions that other people will want to ask as well. But
yeah.
I'm just curious to know, what does an average day for somebody in your field look like? You know, like when I go to the car dealership, I call in a few people selling a car, but what's an average day for a youth worker?
Man, so COVID's definitely changed what my average day looks like, but
I guess non-COVID or average.
No 2 days are the same. I mean, I'm holding a diverse caseload where I work, where I'm working with families, where I'm trying to keep kids in the homes that they're living in, or I'm trying to work with parents to have kids return to them, or I'm working with youth that are living on their own, trying to transition to independence, and so I'm trying to provide some mentorship. That's one of the things that I actually do like about my job, is that, you know, it's very diverse. No 2 days are necessarily the same.
And cookie cutter type of
thing. It's not a cookie. No. And there's weird curveballs that are thrown at me all the time, where I have to critically think and learn and you know, how to figure out how to process through a situation. So it's pretty cool. And that's a fun part about my job. I mean, some days I'm picking kids up from the youth detention center and bringing them back to family or helping them find a place to live, you know, how to budget, how to get back into school and complete high school and think about university and all these kind of, you know, big life decisions that they need help making. But, you know, I'm also working with a lot of addiction, a lot of domestic violence, a lot of domestic, you know, disharmony. It's pretty tough. And what, you know, it's like social work 101 is, you know, somebody needs to be at a place of willingness for you to come and help them. You know, if they're not willing to do it, you can send somebody to an involuntary detox facility, and they get out in hour one, they're using, you know, they need to be at that place where they're willing and they want that change for themselves. And that's in any area of life. That could be pertaining to mental health, addiction, finances, relationships,
right?
You know, any area of life, you need to want that thing almost as much as you want the air that you breathe.
Yeah.
Or else you're not.
Some Eric Thomas stuff right there.
Yeah.
Wow, that's big. Would you say it's challenging? I mean, you can't really speak on behalf of any other person in that industry necessarily, or who you work with, but would you say it's challenging for you to not bring some of that home? Or is it easy for you to just, you know, once you walk out of that door, you don't take it home with you?
Yeah. No, I mean, initially it was very difficult for me to turn off that, you know, switch. But you learn very quickly that your own personal mental health, you know what I mean? You're not going to be able to help somebody else unless you're in a good place. So you have to learn how to flip that switch. So when 4:30 comes and my work day's over, I turn off my phone, I turn off that area of my brain, and I get on to my personal life. If I'm focusing on decisions that somebody else might make and where that's going to land them, and the natural consequences that are going to, you know, spark out of those types of decisions that they're making. I mean, I drive myself nuts and I beat my head against the wall. But at the end of the day, everybody has their own choices to make. And you could clearly outline a path for somebody to success, and it's up to them to walk through those steps to get there. You can never get them there. You know what I mean? It's incredibly difficult to try to pull somebody up a ladder. They're going to pull you down every time. So like, you got to give them the tools and teach them how to, you know, climb that ladder on their own, and they got to climb it. So no, I mean, I'm pretty good about turning off my work brain and get onto my personal brain. And, you know, where I'm at right now in my own life and stuff, I'm really excited about all the things that are happening in my personal life. And so I'd way rather focus on that anyway.
Yeah, that's fair.
And
as you should.
As everybody should.
Yeah, work should never be better than your
personal. A lot of people's identities are hinged on what they do for a living. And that's unfortunate, man.
Yes.
Because, like, that's just one area of who you are as an individual. I'm not just a caseworker or a social worker or a youth worker or whatever you want to call me. I'm so many more things, man. I'm a fisherman. I'm a boyfriend. I'm a builder. I'm a fixer. I'm a grinder. I'm an entrepreneur. I think I'm an investor. I'm I'm somebody who wants to, you know, I like music.
You missed Great Neighbor.
I'm a great neighbor. Yeah, I want to be, I'm a kind individual too. I think I'm pretty kind.
Absolutely.
You know, patience can wear thin sometimes, but, you know, I'm somebody who wants to give back, and there's so many different ways to give back. People think that, you know, going out and being a social worker is, you know, that's the way to give back or whatever. At least in my field, that's kind of the school of thought. I'm like, no, man, if you're good at managing finances, that's one of the biggest hardships that people face in life is financial hardship. If you're able to be a beacon of hope in that area of somebody's life, you can probably save families. You can save kids from being exposed to domestic violence and emotional injury and, you know, poverty. And financial hardship is something that causes so many issues in the family unit. And if you're somebody that's blessed with the tools and skills and knowledge to get out of debt or, you know, invest for the future or bring financial hope to somebody's life, man, you can help them too.
Reach out to Taylor and Steve. Reach out to Taylor and Steve in that world.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
No, I love that. That's a lot of amazing things and just mindsets and perspectives and all that good stuff. And just bringing different value to the audience and a little sneak peek into your life, man, of the past, present, and a little bit of the future. So we appreciate that.
Yeah. So in terms of future, I mean, I had that one property from my former, you know, relationship, and 2020 was a really big year for me. You know, 2020 was the year that I went and traveled Thailand for a year with my new girlfriend. So when my ex-wife and I separated, I think it was like July of 2019. I met my now girlfriend September or early October of 2019. We slowly got to know each other, and you know, by December we were dating. By January we went and traveled Thailand during kind of the Asian wave of COVID.
And, oh, wow.
came back and social isolated with each other. We have been together ever since, every single day, right? And I 2020, so we traveled Thailand. I finalized my divorce, bought another house here in Red Deer now. I was able to grind and do some flips and stuff, and was able to actually pay off my divorce, which was a fairly substantial amount of money for my, you know, little world.
I think it's a substantial amount of money for most people, honestly. Like, nowadays, $1,000 is substantial to a lot of people. So
it was a lot more than $1,000.
Yeah,
many thousand, just south of 30 of them actually. But I was able to achieve a lot, and I have huge goals for 2021. You know, I'm starting to really think about what my future has got to, you know, bring for career. You know, one of the struggles that I'm finding myself in is, I still want to help people. I want to, you know, that's a huge part of who I am. I believe in passing on the torch. I believe in sharing knowledge and wealth, charitable and giving back and all that good stuff. And I think that there's so many ways to do that. And I think that, once again, going back to an earlier point that I made, is if you want to inspire hope to somebody else, you have to become stable yourself. And I'm pretty stable, but I want to become more financially stable. That's a huge area that I'm focusing on right now. And I'm thinking about getting more into real estate. And maybe that means that I'll actually have to change my career. That's something that I'm kind of working on right now, is thinking about, what do I want to get out of my career? Because right now, the thing that I do get is that I'm able to help people, but I struggle with not being compensated based on my performance and my effort and the energy that I put in. That's kind of one of the struggles in working in government is that, you know, you're given a salary and you have to work hard, and you have checks and balances that make sure and monitor that you're putting an effort. But there's a huge entrepreneurial side of me that is just burning, you know, and one of my big passions is real estate. So, you know, I have two homes now. One of them is being rented out, and I want to accumulate more, grow more wealth, and build my empire to one day be able to pass on that torch to my kids. Because, you know,
that word empire.
Yeah, empire. You know, I was never taught the language of financial literacy, and I want to be able to teach my kids that, and I want them to take the empire that I'm able to build and
a legacy.
Build a dynasty. You know what I mean? Mm. Take that empire and make a dynasty out of that thing. You know,
it's a great saying to add to what you're saying, is that you might not come from a rich family, but a rich family can come from you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can be that. You can be that one piece on that family tree that changes the trajectory of generations of your family, essentially.
Exactly.
It could go 4 generations deep, 20 generations deep, however big you build something that you can pass on to not only your children and hopefully your grandchildren and your grandchildren's grandchildren and so on and so forth. The next thing you know, it's like you're Ian being talked about in the family. You're that big chunk on the tree, you know?
Big daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you know what, man? Like, I... Grandpa,
I don't know if I'll ever call you daddy, but...
Grandpa, yeah.
Well, you could. That's what you're saying.
There's so many people that are cringing right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's good.
Well, that's nice for them.
You know what? It's to distill it down to a few points, man. It's okay to look in the past. It's helpful to look into the past, but, you know, let the past stay in the past. Process, you know, the impact that had on you and how and who you became because of it, and keep working toward the future, man. Live in the present, focus on the future. Every once in a while, you might need to look back into the past, and you're going to use that as being a tool to gauge your current success. But and that's a good thing, you know, looking back at where you came from and where you're at now. Hallelujah, man. Like keep doing that. That's fantastic. But don't drive, you know, the car of life looking through the rear view. Look through that windshield, man.
Yeah.
And look toward the goals and hopes and aspirations that you have for yourself. Hinge your identity on things that are stable and things that are also kind of diverse. You know, don't be limited in that. Have a few key essence qualities about yourself that make you who you are, and make sure that when you are about to find, you know, the partner that you want to be with next, make sure that they have qualities about them that complement your essence qualities. Mm-hmm. And
same targets.
Yeah, have targets. We were talking just before we started this podcast about, you know, kind of the exponential growth that you can have just by having somebody who is that you're romantically involved with, that's your partner, you know what I mean, who has similar goals and aspiration, the direction that they're heading. It needs to be working with you and not against you, man. You know, the Bible uses an old quote that talks about, like, getting involved with somebody who's of equal yoke. Well, what that's talking about, and I shared this with you one time before, Steve, one of our couch, you know,
many couch conversations.
Yeah, many
life conversations.
Yeah, is... you know, when you're plowing a field, you back in the old days, you would strap two ox or two bulls or cows or whatever together to pull that plow to get that work done. But those cows need to be of the same kind of mindset, of the same strength and stature, and heading in the same direction. Otherwise, that yoke's going to break if they're heading in two different directions, and you're not going to be able to get that work done. You know, the same is true with the partner that you're choosing in life. They have to have the same values and beliefs and goals and dreams and aspirations, mm-hmm. and be heading in the same direction. You know, a difference in direction that might be very small on the onset, over the years, as that time progresses, that distance, that gap becomes greater and greater and greater. And eventually that yoke will break. You have to have the same goals and mindset.
And I think that goes for even just associations in life.
Oh yeah,
the friendships that you have, you know, like the three of us are getting a little bit closer. But the reason why we can have great conversations and stuff is because we have a lot of the same mindsets and goals, and you know, those associations, you can build off of each other and have commonalities and have generally, you know, relatively the same targets and stuff in place. You know, and I think relationships are huge because that's your life partner, so you obviously need that. But it's the same with the friends and even family members that you have in your life. Like, you know, just because you were born into a family doesn't mean that your cousin needs to be your best friend if they're not on this, you know, that you can't have a conversation about the same type of path, you know, the disagreements. You know, I like to, for me, it's all, I think the yoke thing is really good. I've always, and we've kind of always, you know, I think in our background, we relate it to, like, you're in a boat and you're leaving the dock. You got basically two people in that boat. And if you have two different destinations on that boat, your boat's just going to be spinning circles. You know, if I plug in the GPS that I want to go to, you know, let's say Hawaii, I'm leaving the dock, and then the other person wants to go to Alaska, like, holy crap, that's a long distance. You know, and I always relate, there's a story out there where you only have to be 4 degrees off even a couple degrees off, you know, when you plug in that GPS to get to a destination, and you could end up being 100 miles away from each other.
Exactly.
That gap, over time.
Yeah, that gap is very small and seemingly, you know, irrelevant in the beginning, but over time,
compounding.
Man, it compounds, and that distance is very obvious later on in life. And it's hard to cut that tie then, you know what I mean? Exactly. So that time is going by, that relationship's strengthened, but you know that person isn't right for you.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be rowing the boat with that person. You should probably have somebody else on that same boat with you if you're trying to head in that one direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can't be butting heads. That's counterproductive.
Well, instead of having one motor, it's like having two, when two people are going in the right direction.
Exactly.
I'm plugging away with that 100 horsepower motor. And we only got one.
You're getting to the same place in half the time versus getting to the wrong place in double the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Saving you. That's the power of having the right partner in your corner or the right team. You know what I mean?
Exactly. That's awesome. Well, you know, I don't know what more we could really share with the audience, Ian. I think that was all great. I think there was some really powerful things that we shared here today. You know, I'll also say, like, I'm appreciative of you getting to know not only me, but getting to know Taylor, wanting to jump on this podcast, being vulnerable. I think one thing you can definitely, you know, enlighten people with is that, you know, it's not easy to talk about being off course or, you know, especially a situation with, you know, a parent that, you know, essentially tried to take their own life, you know, a broken relationship with somebody that had a mental illness, and just being able to talk about that stuff and being vulnerable just is a great place of growth and an example that you just shared with the audience. So I think if you're in a field where you want to help people, I think you're going to help out a lot of people just by being as vulnerable as you are, because I think it takes a lot of strength just to be able to have those conversations with two people, let alone with yourself and, you know, now with an audience. So I really thank you for, you know, being vulnerable and being on our show and sharing those things, because I think it takes a really strong person. It just goes to show the character of individual that you are, why, you know, you're on a path to success. And I know that you have the mindset and the drive that's going to get to the goals that you want to have. And, you know, it all starts with being able to be vulnerable and self-aware and be able to grow as an individual. So, you know, I just want to thank you for being on our show, and we really appreciate you being on here. So.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Anything you want to add there, Taylor, before cutting the audience loose?
Cutting the cord? No, I just want to echo exactly what Steve said. And, you know, you're our kind of person, man. So, yeah, I appreciate that, Ian, and just being willing and open. And I know a lot of people will get a lot of value from this, and that's, once again, what this is all about. So we appreciate you, and maybe there will be a 2.0 down the future. And we'll explore
that.
Yeah,
we go buy all these rental properties together.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Build that empire.
When people want to know how we got to, you know, 16 units, we can say, hey, well, we had to start at one.
Yeah, we'll go back to listen to this. Listen to episode 10. There's the beginning.
Exactly.
Love it. So, yeah, thanks again. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
And let's just add in before we part ways here, you know, jump on our Instagram. Check us out. We got a Wiredly Inspired Instagram page. We'd love to hear some comments and feedback on there as well. Taylor's doing a great job of running that. You know, I'm kind of the edit man, and he's the social media guru. So anybody that wants to jump onto that, we'd appreciate that. Again, go on to iTunes, leave us a review, follow us on Spotify, and we look forward to many more guests and greater content. And we're only going to get better by hearing you guys' feedback. So thank you for everybody who's listening, and you know, we'll see you next time. Appreciate every one of you. Thank you. Bye-bye.